Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Kathy Panoff, and I'm the brand new director of what used to be called the University of Texas Performing Arts Center, and as of this week, we are called Texas Performing Arts. Part of the reason that we did that is we wanted a name that was not just a building name, we wanted a name that really told our audiences, the faculty that we share a campus with, that a little bit more about what we do. So I want to welcome you. I want to tell you that this is also our first campus and community engagement event of the season, and my first season event with the performance this evening. I'm very, very proud to be here, and this particular concert was something that I added after I was hired because I felt like it brought such a great vibe to the season, sort of marrying a classical musician, a guy who's considered a popular musician, and one of the most revered Indian musicians in the world, Zakir Hussain. The thing that's so interesting to me about musicians at this level is they all have made their name. Edgar, for example, in the classical music field, and Bailout, certainly in Newgrass, and then moving into the Flecktones. And Zakir has been so revered for so long, but primarily in classical Indian music. But people like these musicians of this level of virtuosity, Yo-Yo Ma has done the same. When they get into their middle years of being a musician, I think they're really into anything. And they want the opportunity to experiment and tour with people that they've never done that before. And I really have a great deal of respect for that. Just to tell you a quick story, Bela, as you know, or you may not know, he toured Africa over the last 2 years with his brother, who's a documentary filmmaker, and they traced the history of the banjo, which they have found its roots in Africa. He just told me in the green room that it was the most exciting thing he's ever done. They produced the documentary. In fact, it won an award last year at South by Southwest in the media division, and they're getting ready to come out with an album, and I told him that I'd give him a little plug here. It's my great pleasure to introduce our speaker this evening, who is Dr. Sonia Seaman. She is an ethnomusicologist in the Butler School of Music. I was just talking with Sonia. I went to conservatory many decades ago, and ethnomusicology was not in the academic lexicon at that time, even though many composers have been using ethnomusics for years. Debussy, where would he be without gamelan music, and the gypsy music of Dvorak and Smetana and all those kinds of composers. In fact, speaking of gypsy music, Dr. Seaman's area of research specialty is in music of Turkey, the Ottoman Empire, and also music of the Roma, which is essentially gypsy music. So you're here to hear her, and so I will turn the microphone over, and I want to thank Sonia for doing this for us tonight. Enjoy.
Thank you, and thank you, Kathy, for this opportunity. As I look out and see this amazing sea of faces, I want to ask you guys. I know you've all come to this concert probably with some different expectations and a lot of expertise. So maybe a show of hands, who's come here because they want to hear Bela Fleck and they know all about the banjo or bluegrass traditions? Great. All right, who's come here to hear Edgar Meyer, who's considered to be the greatest virtuoso on the double bass? Excellent. And who's here to, who's been drawn by Zakir Hussain, who is one of the finest tabla players from North India? Wow. Okay, so maybe what we should do, instead of me talking, I'll just put you all in little groups and you'll educate each other. This is really an amazing concert in a number of ways, and you all may individually know things that I don't know, but I'll provide a little bit of a framework and some things to listen for and listen to. I learned that this is actually the first concert in their 19-city tour. I just learned this from Judith Radin and Kathy Panoff. So we are very, very fortunate. And I can't say what they're going to do. The reason I can't say that is because they just came out with a CD called Melodies of Rhythms, which was accompanied by the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. And there's not going to be a Detroit Symphony Orchestra tonight. It's going to be these three great virtuosi who are from three very, very different traditions. And they are going to be working with some of the musical structures that are in common and that they've shared and collaborated with on this CD. But so my job here is to give you a little bit of a framework and maybe some things to listen for. And maybe we could start with world music. Do you guys know what world music is? You're familiar with that term? Kind of? Yeah. How many know of it from, I don't know, universities, world music? Great. How many of know of it from Tower Records and Borders and those nice displays at Starbucks? Right. Yeah. That's actually the most common way that people understand world music now. World music actually, there's a couple ways we can look at it. World music is kind of a redundant term, right? Doesn't every society in the world have music? So one way of looking at this is that there are communities all over the world that perform different styles of music, and there is a truism, you probably have heard, that music is a universal language. And actually, those of us in academia, from all the work that we've done and all the struggles we've gone through, really, we would politely disagree. What we'd say is that every community or society has music, but it's not mutually intelligible. They have very specific traditions, just like language has its own grammar, its sets of terms, and being able to understand the meanings really takes some time to be in each tradition. So in terms of world music, the question is, how do you get these artists who are from very different traditions that have very specific languages and grammars, how do they form a common world out of music? And where does that term come from? Well, the second term that we were talking about, world music, actually is a very new term. It's a 1987 term coined by a group of 25 managers and record producers in the top floor of a pub. I guess that's a great place to, you know, forge new ground in music, is in a pub, that met in order to find a category that they could put together their artists and recordings that they had been working with that in the past would be stuck in the back bins of record stores under the deathly dull label of international. And under international, you could find Edith Piaf from France, you could find polka hits, and other examples from specific traditions in the world. But it didn't have the same cachet. What do you do with an artist like Salif Keita, who plays a traditional kora instrument from West Africa, but also plays and has been playing various versions of tangos and soft jazz dance music since the 1960s. So they coined this term world music as a way to bring these artists into greater prominence. And not only has it brought these artists into greater prominence, but now it becomes a bridge for artists to do these kinds of collaborations so that we don't have Edith Piaf in France and polka music from Poland or from Germany in another place or in another concert. So a lot of artists now are actually creating music that's meant to be world music. And in some of the examples that we would know about, Gypsy Kings, who actually don't just do flamenco music, but they're merging it with rock and pop and blues. And so this concert tonight is a really good example of these kinds of fusions coming together. So let's talk a little bit about these three artists and what they come from and then what they bring together. On the surface, it seems like they're really radically different traditions. So Bella Fleck comes from a tradition that, as we learned from Kathy, well, we think of this as being from the southern U.S., but in fact comes from Africa, and they think most likely from Senegal. And as an instrument, the banjo was brought over with slaves beginning in the 17th century and brought first to the West Indies and to the southern part of the U.S. and was part of African-American musical culture. It actually didn't make it into white mainstream culture until the 19th century when it was adopted into minstrel shows as part of a string band sound in white caricatures and nostalgic portrayal of Southern plantation culture, and developed into a string band tradition by the late 19th century, and not really into a virtuosic instrument at all until we have Bill Monroe and his contributions, particularly with Earl Scruggs, the weather has been changing, and I don't know, so I hate to think I'm getting allergies, but it could be happening. So in this tradition, you have an instrument that actually was a backup instrument. So maybe to hear a little bit of this old sound from a revision of the minstrel tradition, can we hear a little bit of track one, which is called Old Joe, and this is a new version of old minstrel style performance. You're going to hear banjo, fiddle, which is a low class name for violin, guitar, and bones. You can hear a little of the banjo pretty much imitating the melodic line, but adding some rhythmic subdivisions, not really stretching out on its own. And this is something that began to happen in the 1940s with the bluegrass movement, which was a new movement in the U.S., where urban people got interested in revising country music culture and developing the string tradition further. So one of the big stars of the 40s that has had a big impact on Bella Fleck is Earl Scruggs. And I'm going to play a little example of him. He has had a big influence on a lot of people because he developed the technique and really pushed the banjo into a solo instrument. He developed a three-finger plucking technique on the five-string banjo. So here's a tune that you probably know, but you might not know that this was Earl Scruggs and the hit of 1963.
Listen to my story about a man named Jed. Poor mountaineer, barely kept his family fed. And then one day he was shooting at some food, and up through the ground come a bubbling crude. Oil, that is, black gold, Texas tea.
And if we wouldn't think of it as part of this television show, we'd really be struck by the virtuosic plucking techniques and the really elaborate improvisations that he's doing. This, though, was the Ballad of Jed Clampett. Well, let's see what Bella Fleck did with the same tune in his reinterpretation of the Ballad of Jed Clampett.
Come and listen to my story about a man named Jed. Poor mountaineer, barely kept his family fed. And one day he was shooting at some food, and up from the ground came a bubbling crude.
Oil, that is, black gold, Texas tea.
First thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire. Kinfolk said, Jed, move away from there. Said, California is the place you ought to be. So they loaded up the hoop there and they moved to Beverly.
Hills, that is. Swimming pools. Movie stars. Sunset Boulevard.
attention. Ooh, it was swank.
Next door neighbor was the man who owned the bank. So there you get the banjo, but a whole different take. And even if you just listen to the line where he takes the quote from Earl Scruggs, he's putting in some blues notes and he's putting in some innovations. And that's very typical of what Bella Fleck represents in what's called Newgrass, which is this progressive bluegrass movement that started in the 60s and 70s, where they began drawing from a series of different traditions and making new compositions in that style. Another instrument that you're going to be hearing tonight, played by Edgar Meyer, is the double bass. And the double bass is also one of those very sad background instruments, really. It was invented in the 16th century to do what? To imitate the cello line. I mean, that's all it did. It followed the cello line. And it wasn't until the late 18th century that there even were specific compositions for the double bass. And if you look at an orchestra, where is the double bass? In the back. Way in the back, right? Yeah, and a little to the right, yeah. There you go. So really, it's only been in jazz that we have more of a voice for the double bass, more of a role, where it's doing more than just doubling a line or providing chordal support. So one of the things that's so exciting about Edgar Meyer is his absolute virtuosic mastery of the instrument and what he's been doing with it. He took it out of the back of the orchestra. And he's not only been doing very interesting interpretations of classical music, but he's been collaborating with artists from different traditions. He's been working with the Indigo Girls, with James Taylor, Garth Brooks. He's been doing country. And he has been working with the Chieftains, which are a semi-traditional group from Ireland. So in a sense, this way is showing that classical music, which is a very specific Eastern or Western European and U.S.-oriented high culture tradition, is now becoming world music. So I wanted to play you an example of the kinds of things that Edgar Meyer has been stepping out into. This is a track called Travis, and you're going to hear him playing with Bella Fleck, and he's doing more than just accompanying the lines and more than just playing the bass, but he's going to be playing blues lines and not just plucking as they would be in jazz, but he's bowing the bass like a cello instrument and playing a counterpart, a different independent line with the banjo line. So here's a little bit of this track called Travis. Thank you. So for the third part of our trio, we have Zakir Hussain, who is a master, an usta, of an instrument called the tabla. I think many of you may know what a tabla is. Some of you, for some of you that don't, it's a North Indian classical percussion instrument which developed around the 17th century under the Mughal Empire when North India was under Muslim rule. And it's an instrument that, like the bass, it is viewed as having somewhat of an accompanying role, although it's a little bit more elaborate in that it's not just rhythm. It provides rhythm, but because it's played with an instrument that has two heads and each head is tuned, there are actually 19 different pitches that are played on the tabla. And the students who learn tabla have to learn the pitches by reciting particular syllables. And they actually recite the syllables before they play them with both hands. So it's a very rich tradition, and it's one where the rhythm is, in fact, a melody. And this was the inspiration for the title of this concert and the CD, Melodies of Rhythm, because in fact, in Zakir Hussain's work, he really pulls out the melodic aspects of rhythmic performance. I was very fortunate to see a concert of his group, which is based in San Francisco. And what they did for the first number is they came out of the back of the auditorium with plastic tubes. And they all played the plastic tubes. And they hit them on the backs of seats and hopefully not on the backs of heads. But they made a beautiful concert and improvisation out of the different pitches that they were playing with these tubes. And this is part of the playfulness of Zakir Hussain's work. So he comes from a tradition, as I mentioned, it's North Indian, and it might be one that we could take a little bit of time with in just learning some of the basics and what we can be listening to from Zakir Hussain. In the Indian classical tradition, they break the tradition into melody. You can always expect there'll be a solo melody instrument or voice, rhythm, usually the tabla in North India, and drone. So you're always going to hear some kind of steady pitch throughout the texture. And each has its own function. So as I mentioned, there are these melodic aspects to the rhythm where there are 19 different pitched rhythms, and they're organized in modes that are called tala. And these go from 2 to 128 beats. So there are dozens of different talas that are known, not only by the performers, but by the audience members. And then in terms of the melody, there are hundreds of what are called raga, which are melodic modes, and these modes are also known by audience members, and they have particular functions. In the older system, they would be assigned to different times of the year, different times of the day, and different moods. So one of the things that I'd like us to do maybe is learn a little bit about one of the talas, which they play on melodies of rhythm. This is a very common one called tintal, which is 16, but it's broken into 4 times 4. So I'll show you how it goes, and actually you're going to do this with me. You've got two hands, so I want both of your hands. Good. All right. So what you're going to do is clap, touch, touch, touch. So that's 4. Clap, touch, touch, touch. And you're going to do that again. 2, 2, 3, 4. For the third one, you're going to wave. Wave, 2, 3, 4, and then clap again. Clap, 2, 3, 4. You've actually just done 16. That's easy, right? So easy, you're going to do it again. And clap, 2, 3, 4. 2, 2, 3, 4. Wave, 2, 3, 4. 4, 2, 3. Again, 1, 2, 3, 4. 4, 2, 2, 3, 4. 3, 2, 3, 4. 4, 2, 3, 4. The same thing happens in Indian audiences as well. But What's so exciting about this is when you do this, you're actually keeping beat with the tabla player. So he's not just laying out those 16 beats, he's doing all kinds of very clever improvisations. So we're going to listen to a very short improvisation on the first CD again. Yeah, a number four. And this is from a very an introductory section. And what I want you to listen for is that you're going to hear a melody instrument play one little figure three times. And when they do that, they're going to end right on one. And this is a very special technique called mora, or tihai. And both the melody instruments and the tabla player will do this, not necessarily at the same time. And it's very, very exciting. So this is why it's really good to be able to clap tintal. So that's the first one. Two. Good. All right, so we're going to try a little bit of this. Yeah, let's see. Maybe take it about 1 minute into it. At the beginning of each classical performance, and the reason why I'm going to lay this out is I'm wagering that one of the pieces they're going to do is called Babar, and they set this out very much in the Indian classical format. And since some of you are probably more familiar with U.S. and Western European traditions and might be less familiar with this, I thought it would take a little bit of time. In case they do this piece, you'll understand what's going on. So at the beginning of an Indian classical concert or set of pieces, you're going to hear no rhythm. You're going to hear a drone and melody. And that lays out the raga and the improvisation. It's called alap. And then after a period of time when everyone is warmed up, including the audience, because the audience is getting warmed up into it, then the tabla player will enter with the tala, with the rhythm. So we're going to listen to a bit of an alap, and then I'm going to take you over to Zakir Hussain and Bella Fleck and Edgar Meyer and how they do their version of an alap. So about 1 minute into this. Get ready with your hands. Okay, that's just to warm up a little bit. Let's hear what they do. This is Bella Fleck, Edgar Meyer, and Zakir Hussain together in their piece called Babar, which they name after the founder of the Mughal Empire in India from the 16th century. So at the beginning, they have this unmetered section. There's no rhythm. It's just Edgar Meyer playing this very elaborate improvisation, and he goes soaring into the upper register. And then you're going to hear the banjo coming in with an independent line, and then the tabla comes in playing Tintal. So let's hear the beginning of that. So he's drawing a little bit on the jig tradition. It's like a jig dance. So that's a little bit of one of the kinds of things that you can expect. So you hear the bass coming in, bringing what could be Western classical music, the banjo playing something that could be a jig, and then it all comes together in this really beautiful way, all structured like a North Indian classical piece. For the last bit, I'm just going to play you a little bit of another example. This comes from their concerto. So they commissioned a concerto. It's called a triple concerto for trio solo instruments. And this was just recorded by the Detroit Symphony. And in the very first movement, they come in with a meter in seven. Again, this could be from North Indian tradition. It could also be from Eastern Europe. And it's in a 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, dumba, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. And this is really wonderful because you can hear not only the banjo and the bass and the tabla playing, but you have the flute and other members of the orchestra answering back. So a little bit of that from the concerto, which doesn't sound very much like a Western European concerto. There's your seven. So just from this very brief introduction and a bit of an appetizer for what you're going to hear tonight, we can see that world music actually now means more than just music from other places in the world. But world music means creating a new space for new kinds of worlds to happen in between and among artists from very different traditions that find common ground. So do you have any questions? They actually wrote it together, Edgar Meyer and Bella Fleck. The question was whether someone wrote this music for them. Edgar Meyer and Bella Fleck wrote these works together in collaboration with Zakir Hussain. So they're actually co-composing. Yeah. Great. Well, enjoy the concert. Thank you very much for your attention.